This is The Takeaway with Tanzina Vega from WNYC and PRI, Public Radio International, in collaboration with WGBH Radio in Boston.
Let's take it back to the 70s in Southern California, to the city of Los Angeles, home to America's oldest black woman-owned nightclub, Catch One. At its height, the club hosted the likes of Madonna and other cultural icons. Jewel Thaise Williams bought the downstairs bar of Catch One in 1973 for the sum of $18,000. 2 years later, she purchased the upstairs space, and by 1975, the Catch was open and inclusive to communities that at the time were often excluded from mainstream nightlife.
If you were female, if you were black, if you were gay, that was one of the reasons why Jewel started Catch One, because there was a need. There was a need for anyone and everyone to be able to go and dance and enjoy themselves.
That's C. Fitz, the director of a documentary about Jewel and her patrons. It's called Jewel's Catch One. The club closed in 2015 after more than four decades, but I spoke with her and Jewel about the safe space the Catch provided at the height of the disco scene and through the depths of the AIDS crisis.
In Los Angeles, it was the beginning of what we call the gay sexual revolution. It was basically and really quite ground floor, in that there was very little public things that were available, period, for lesbians and gays in those days.
Yeah, they did a lot of house parties just because they'd get shut down.
Yeah.
The 70s especially, you know, were coming out of the Watts riots, you know, late 60s and going into the 70s, and, you know, there wasn't any police authority support or not much of it, that's for sure. And she became a target. It was tough to get it off the ground and going.
There's a whole culture that people don't know about, right? You said house parties, the after hours clubs, like after 4 a.m. they would continue.
Yeah,
the party
or even before, because right. There wasn't any real safe spaces, you know.
No.
And Jewel, that's what Catch was. It was a safe space to dance, and everybody could go.
Jewel, I would love if you could describe to us a sense of the scene. What are people wearing? What are people doing?
As you know, gay guys are always the front runners of the fashion trends, whether it's for them designing for women or for themselves. So they dressed up. They went all out for coming to the club and trying to be the fiercest dresser in the house, only to sweat it out within the next half hour or so after arriving. So,
right, and I think a lot of people don't even know that, right? I would say to people, back in the day, we'd go to the club and we would sweat. Like, that's
yes.
How much you danced, right?
Yes. No, if you didn't sweat, then you didn't dance, really.
And one of the things that I think the club scene, you know, when I was growing up represented, and I'm wondering if this was the same with the Catch, was freedom, safety, the ability to just be free and spin around and wear what you want, just this expression, right?
Oh, for sure. And you're right about the freedom. I found it for myself there, too. I wasn't, you know, out of the closet and open, you know, to my family, friends, or anyone except the innermost friends and acquaintances, gay and lesbian ones that I had. So it was a place for me and others to come out and know that we weren't just a handful of people, but there was literally thousands of us.
And, so it was a sort of like a refuge in some ways.
Oh, without a doubt. You know, there were kids that were being put out by their parents and others that were ostracized by the churches and pretty much by the community at large, and quite a few were homeless.
Became more than just a nightclub.
Oh, yeah, right. Without a doubt. Oh,
I want to just pivot just for a minute back to Fitz. In terms of the role the police play, tell us a little bit about that.
Sure. When Jewel opened, they raided her, shut her down. They would come in with their rifles drawn and fake that they're looking for somebody and all kinds of ways to harass her. And that continued on. And imagine that, you know, taking that responsibility for hundreds of people in that club and trying to continue making it a safe space and a place where, you know, they won't be harassed.
Well, we also know that this era that I recall also came with a really sad, under tone, which was the AIDS crisis in particular. So can you tell us a little bit about what that was like?
It was frightening, to say the least, and it just wasn't pretty much every day or two or weekly thing when someone would come in and announce somebody else had been tested and they had it and they were in a hospital and we had hospices there. And I can't even tell you how many men that I held close to my shoulder and while they were crying about dying and their fear of that. But it just kept on growing and growing and growing.
She lost more than half her patrons at the club.
Oh, my God.
And imagine, and they weren't just patrons. A lot of them were her friends because the Ketch had become a home to them, and she was mom.
One of the my closest of those friends that I called my brother, he was a part-time bartender there. We had talked for months about, you know, safety, and then he started to get sick, so I suggested that he get tested. And he said, okay. I said, do you want me to go with you? And he said, no, I'm okay because I never do anything that I should have gotten a disease from. So he came back in 2 or 3 hours and with tears in his eyes and then said, sister, I got it. I said, oh, my God. And we both just cried then together. And he too passed in about 5 or 6 months.
You know, we're sort of assuming that you had a lot of support from the LGBTQ community, but what about the Black community?
No, that did not happen. The Black community is very religious in general and were down on homosexuality. So there was no going to a church and asking for help in our community.
The traditional ways?
Right. There was no, you know, trying to get money or anything from them. But we did help fund and start the Minority AIDS Project. And I was also on the board of APLA, AIDS Project Los Angeles, the preeminent AIDS organization here in LA during those days.
Is there anything you miss about the club?
You know, after 40 years, it for sure had become a place where people, sometimes parents, sometimes friends, sometimes cousins, would call or come there if they knew that who they were looking for was gay or lesbian and ask if they knew them. I missed the camaraderie. I missed the family connections that I had and the community in general that the Ketch had spawned.
And I thought that it was remarkable that more people didn't know who Jewel was. She's a national hero, an international hero, you know, on this corner of Pico and Norton in Los Angeles. And I just felt that the story needed to be told. People needed to know Jewel. People needed to hear the stories of Ketch, understand them. It was, to me, an unwritten textbook that just needed to be made.
Well, I want to thank you both for being with us on The Takeaway.
Thank you so much
for
having us.
Thank you for the invite, yes.
That was C. Fitz and Jewel Thais Williams. The documentary is called Jewel's Catch One, and you can find it on Netflix.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.